Hello, and welcome to our first episode of Season 2, Industry Herb Unearthed. This is a whole season of conversations with up-and-coming artists and bands that are shaking things up and pushing music forward. On today's episode, Ned will be talking to Nelson from Nelly's Echo. For over a decade, Nelson and Mockfi has been making some of the happiest, most jubilant music you've ever heard. Sometimes with a full band, sometimes all by his lonesome, under the name Nelly's Echo, he has been taking his chilled-out sound and his powerful voice all over the country. Ned recently got a chance to sit down with Nelson and talk about, among other things, his non-traditional faith, musical conversations, and best practices for talking to women. Let's go to their conversation now.
All right, welcome to Industry Herb, everyone. We're here with Nelson from Nelly's Echo. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate you.
I'm really excited. Let's get us started. So, seen you perform at outdoor venues, churches, restaurants, and each time you bring a different and yet perfect energy to that specific venue. How do you achieve this?
That's a good way to put it. Thank you. A different, but you say perfect?
Perfect. It's always perfect.
Wow. I'm curious, why did you say perfect? Why did you say different and perfect?
So I've seen you play at the Avenue, okay. And you're like playing to like a large group of people, and you always have like your band with like the drums and synths and stuff.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks ago, we saw you at Nacho Mama's, and it was just you had acoustic guitar. You were making like trumpet noises with your mouth. I think
yeah.
It's kind of mind blowing. But like, yeah. It's like you just like fit into like whatever box you need to for that moment.
That's really really. Pretty good observation on your part, because I feel with every fiber in my body that music is a conversation, and if you think of it as a conversation, then the best way to be a good conversationalist is to be a good listener. If you find a bunch of really good musicians in the room and they play, it'll sound like just one person speaking, even though there could be five pieces on stage, or one piece, or two pieces on stage. If it's a bunch of good musicians playing together, it'll feel like just one thing coming at the individual, which is why really good music draws you in, because it's not distracting, it's not clutter. But good musicians are the best listeners, because they know when to be the canvas, and then they know when to be the paint on the canvas, and then they pick and choose when to express or be background. So they listen to each other. So to kind of take that premise and apply it to who I am as a musician, when I'm playing with my band in front of 300-500 people versus by myself, or even by myself in front of 300-500 people, I try to think of what I'm offering as a conversation. And if you pay attention to people, you realize what they want to talk about, right? If you pay attention to, you know, body language, you realize what is connecting with them. And then if you realize what's connecting with them, you give them more of what they need, and then they'll give you more of what you need because you're listening to them. They will in return listen to you. So I wouldn't say I'm a perfect musician by any means. I'm not even close in terms of skill-wise. But I'm getting better over the years at listening to people and watching people and having a conversation through music.
That's fantastic. So a conversation is two-sided. Are there situations where you've seen the musicians are being good conversationalists and the audience isn't holding up their end? What do you do when that happens?
That's a good question. Yes, and it could be there are so many variables. So you can have two willing participants in the conversation, but then the atmosphere is not conducive for conversation. For example, if you are, you know, let's say, you know, you're trying to, you know, talk to a girl, and you're trying to, you know, and your style of communication is poetry, but you're trying to speak poetry to a girl at a very loud nightclub, she will not get the nuance of poetry, right? And she is not only trying to listen over the loudspeakers, she's having a million things stimulating her senses in this atmosphere. So maybe the best thing to do is get her number, shut up, and then invite her out to like a lounge or a dinner where you can actually, you know. Now, if you're a club musician and that is your thing, that is where you have your conversation because you specialize in the chaos of that environment, and that's cool. So a lot of times you find, which is why I am learning to figure out the best platforms for my music to really be impactful. So my style doesn't work well in some rooms. Like, don't get me wrong, I can play a bar where there's this, like you saw me at Nacho Mama's, where there's a TV, there's bar, you have your friends and family there. I can engage you, but it's not as impactful as a space where we can both control the narrative, where you can have no distractions to listen to me, and I have no distractions in taking the listener on the journey.
Okay. Very interesting.
Does that answer the question?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your release output last year. It was pretty crazy. You put out 6 songs, right?
Actually, I put out 12.
12 songs? Oh, my mistake.
11, 12, yeah.
So what was behind the decision to do that versus like an album or an EP or something?
Good question. Actually, good question. I didn't see, here's the funny thing, and this is, for whoever's listening, people are noticing what you're doing because I'll give you the long-winded answer.
Okay, okay.
We live in a world right now where it's tough to get people's attention unless you are pretty consistent, one, or you are controversial, or you are, you know, luck of the draw, really, really talented. I'm not controversial. I'm not the most talented guy in the room. And I struggled over the years with consistency. By that, I mean releasing consistent content over time. So I realized at the beginning of 2019 that I have so much music, so much material that will probably, God forbid, when I'm old and gray and eventually I've lived a really long life, end up with me in the grave. I'm like, this is sad that we hold back ourselves for fear of what public perception of our content. So my criteria for releasing music were these. For the 2019, first of all, I know I have enough content in my library to release 24 songs for the next 24 months. I know I do have that right now. I know the only thing holding me back primarily is my lack of consistency. So I give myself a goal. I will be consistent every month to put out a new song and a new video every month. Also, I knew I had enough songs that I liked. Right, so it's one thing to presume what people might like, but it's a whole other thing to say, no, I like these songs of mine. I'm not being a narcissist or anything. I'm like, this makes me feel good. I like the fact that I wrote it this way, and I like the songs. I want to be more consistent. I want to rid myself of that fear of judgment, of public perception. So guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to release my content every month that I like. And if people gravitate to it, great. If not, great. But ultimately, I found over my 30, I'm 39 years old, I found in my life that the actions that I regret the most are not actions, are inactions. So 2019 was a great year. Not so much because I had like significant highs in my brand, Ellie's Echo. It was more because I enjoyed releasing content that I loved consistently.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about like the music of your childhood. Like, what inspires you? What has influenced you?
That's good. you're going deep, man. I like that.
We try to go deep at industry.
Yeah. I was going to say that's what she said, but I'm like, nah, I can't say that. sorry about that. Let's see. So obviously I'm Nigerian, and I grew up listening to Nigerian music. I was in Nigeria till I was about the age of 15. So my roots Nigerian music, African music, but primarily Nigerian music. But even while in Nigeria, I was exposed to Western music like Motown, country, soul, rock and roll, some European music, so and even Asian music. So I was exposed to a lot of different music. And so that kind of informed who I was coming here to America in 1996. So I describe my music as something you haven't heard before, but it feels familiar because all those styles I was exposed to informed who I am today as a musician and as a person.
That's interesting. I definitely noticed that in your music, like something I hadn't heard before. Like the first time I heard it, it was sort of like poppy and a little bit like rock, but there was also just like that different element.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been really fascinated by the way it sounds like so many different places, like places I'm unfamiliar with, but it's like you want to keep listening to like figure out where it's coming from.
Even with that too, you think the human mind is very curious, which is a sad reality about racism and sexism and whatever isms you can think of, because those isms kind of place us in a box to suggest that whatever doesn't fit this box is dangerous, is should be hated, should be pushed away from the box. Whereas if we stopped long enough to just look, our box is just an average of all the boxes that exist in the world, and they can all fit within our concept if we allow them space in there to just understand them and digest them. So one of my favorite things in life to do is to walk into a room looking the way I look, watching people and knowing that they expect a certain thing, and then for them to go, oh, I didn't expect that, and then have their minds subtly change to being more open to the idea of, let's not, even though a cover, you should judge a book by its cover, but let's actually wait to see the content of the book before we can appreciate the book and decide whether or not this book is for us or not for us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you do that through your music.
Yes, I love it. It's like, just to kind of dispel people's idea of, okay, for example, I play this thing that's called National Association of Campus Activities.
Okay.
Most of my bread and butter is made in the spring and fall seasons, playing primarily colleges all over the country.
Okay.
I've been doing that for 10 years. But to get those tours in the college scene, you have to go play showcases, right? And my booking agents, God bless them, they're trying to do the best for the business and the brands. But they say things like, ah, man, go there and, play these songs, or so that way you can get you booked all through February for Black History Month, because schools want diversity on their campuses, right? And I know what they're saying. They're basically saying, we understand psychology of human behavior. They want to feel, if there's a diversity month, they want to bring people that don't look like the norm in their campuses, which might look more predominantly white, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, what better person to bring in a diversity month than someone that is black?
Right.
But then you see them sitting there and they're watching, and the students who are going to make the decisions whether or not to bring me to their campuses. You see them watching, and then they say, you can just see all those, the layers just peeling off. Like, we're expecting this guy to be the black thing we brought to our campuses. But no, we actually see him coming on a March, on a April, on a September, because he breaks all those stereotypes we're thinking. Is it going to be R&B? No, it's not just R&B. Is it going to be our stereotypes of who a black guy should be? No, he has a guitar. He sings songs that, like I said, sound familiar, but you've never heard before. So I like breaking those stereotypes and bringing people together by doing that through music.
We'll be right back to the interview after this message from our sponsor. Let's return to Ned's conversation with Nelson.
So your like musical diversity,
yeah,
is that like a conscious choice, or does it just happen from like your artistic process? Like, do you sit down and you're like, I'm going to make the song and have elements of R&B and soul and hip hop and also like African music, or is it just you write the song and that's the way it sounds because that's who you are?
The latter. It's who I am. Now, don't get me wrong. There's sometimes you might write a song because, man, I'm feeling that vibe. I like that beat. Let's vibe off that beat. Like, musician, are you a musician?
Yeah, sort of, kind of.
What do you play?
I play guitar, but,
okay, cool.
You know, it's more of a like a hobby than, you know, anything else than that.
Do you play with other people, like drummers and bass players? And
I have before.
Okay. So you probably know the term when musicians are like together, like, oh man, that's a cool vibe. Let's just say,
yeah.
Let's just vibe. And the vibe could be anything. And basically you just say, man, I like what you just said. Tell me more about that. That's all it is in conversation. When you hear musicians say, oh man, that's a cool beat, that's a cool melody, that's a cool whatever. Let's stay there. Let's explore that some more. It's in conversation. That means, man, that was a really good thing you just said. Tell me more about that. That's all it is. So I never write. I almost never write. Because when you do that, then you run the risk of being fake and inauthentic. I don't know if that's the word, but I'm saying it. It's a free country. But you run the risk of becoming inauthentic. And so I just write the way I feel. And if it comes out that people like it to and they gravitate towards it, great. If not, great.
That's a great attitude to have, I think, when you're creating. I think people get really caught up in, like, how something will be perceived. And it's like that, it's like it's a compass, and that's just another magnet that twists the needle away from where they need to go.
True.
So, if I could ask a more specific question about a song of yours that I really like. Wahala in America. That is definitely like my favorite song off of Run Away. Sorry. So like what, like what was your process writing that song? Like what's it about? What were you thinking about when you wrote it?
I'm shocked. You know, I'm shocked. Like, you might be asking before I answer that question. Can you mind me asking you, why is that your favorite song?
I like, okay, a couple things. I like the repetition of America. It's like working hard in America, looking for a job in America. You know, like it keeps coming back to like the same word.
Yeah.
And I like the little like, I don't know what you would call it at the beginning. It's like, Wahala.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, like pre-verse. I don't know what you would call it. Intro, yeah.
Yeah,
it just has, and then like the beat is very like infectious and kind of like, it's a nice vibe, like you said. I don't know. It's hard to explain why I like it, but that one, it always is the one that like sticks in my head.
That is crazy. I wish I had that in video or record that. But that is crazy that's a Afro pop song. And it doesn't, so that's what I was saying to you. So Afro pop market, the song doesn't necessarily fit in that market. It's, people understand the song in that market, but it's not really, it doesn't really fit that market, because that market has a distinct sound and style and tempo and all that stuff. Even though it can survive in that market because by itself it's authentic and it's whatever, but it won't fit very well in that market. Anyway, so the reason why it's blowing my mind away is because I'm writing an Afro-pop song with Nigerian lingo, right? I've lived here for 23, 24 years now. And I pretty much have my Western ways, but I have my African core values, my African core sensibilities about me. So that's just me puking out who I am. Like, the slang is what I know, but the vibe is what I grew up with, you know. But then, a Caucasian guy, you know, in America, is hearing something about that song and he can identify with it. So the song is talking about, it's a kind of a tongue-in-cheek song.
Okay.
So obviously, America is a beautiful place to live in,
mm-hmm.
and it's easier to live here in America versus in Nigeria. Cost of living, you know, way of life, everything's simpler and easier here, obviously. So for an African man to be in America, right, and complaining, it's almost like a spoiled child. Like, no, you actually, in America, you made it here. Everything is easier, should be easier for you. There's access to education, industry, whatever. And it should be easier for you. So why are you complaining? People that should be complaining are the Africans in Africa who are going through some harsh conditions. So Wahala in America is basically me saying that I came to America trying to get I got a job. I'm making money, but Uncle Sam wants all my money, right? Mm-hmm. Or I came to America, there's all these fly honeys, and I got one of them pregnant, and now she wants my money, right? I came to America, I'm making all this good money, but my auntie who's back, this is my auntie that she keeps saying, busy buddy, where my money? That's my auntie. Mm-hmm. She, my auntie in Nigeria, who is living through harsher conditions than I am, is asking me for some money, but all I'm doing is complaining about not wanting to give her money. There's a part too that's also tongue-in-cheek, two parts you might appreciate. There's a part where I say, Oyinbo girls, they laugh at me, say my accent, it is funny. What that simply means is the white girls are laughing at me because I have a funny accent, right? And there's another part that goes, the land of milk and honey has made my ikebe jiggly. That simply means the land of milk and honey has made me fat. I can't fit into my pants anymore. Right? I got a big butt. That's what I said. So it's amazing that song, you gravitated towards that song. That's fascinating to me. I could go on forever.
That's awesome. It's cool to hear like the inside, because like I don't know. But that's like Nigerian slang, or
yeah.
I mean, I don't know any of that. I know. But it's fascinating to learn it.
I'm shocked that like, you, out of all the songs, that's the one. Die, that's funny.
So, okay, this is a little bit deeper. But as an artist, just I've always noticed like an openness about your faith.
Mm.
How has that shaped your musical pathway?
Wow. So I am Christian, but probably not in the traditional sense that we find people today's world. Not because I think I'm better. I know I'm definitely not. I'm probably worse off than most people think. But I have this core belief that is rooted in my Christian faith, and that core belief is. We're all God's children, and we're all created equal. We're not all equal, but we're all created equal in God's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And every man and woman has a worth that cannot be taken away from them, regardless of where you find them in life. That worth is God-given as a human being. That's, you're created in the image of God and likeness of God. So that phrase right there is at the core of my belief. Now, how does that translate to my music? It's very important for me in a room full of people to make everyone feel that worth through my music, my behavior, my conduct, everything. So I was telling someone, I don't know who I was talking to the other day, but I was talking about hecklers sometimes. I don't get a lot of hecklers, but every once in a while you get this drunk guy or this interrupted lady or whatever. And As the person with the microphone, with the power and the authority on stage, I could crush human beings. Like, I could say a thing, I could ridicule you, I could mm-hmm. pull you down. And it's really hard for me to do that, because when you do that, you might feel good for like a little bit. Oh, yeah, I got you. But then you're taking away the worth from that human being. And I see that to be the case with society now. Sadly, it's like we're devoid of the worth that God has placed in human beings, and which is why it's easy to bash people now, which is mm-hmm. why it's easy to pull people down on social media. So part of me wanting to do my own podcast too was just to have a little pocket of light that I can share, whatever God has done in me, I can share through me to the world. And so that's how my faith informs my music. It's people first. Now, some of the content within my music might be controversial, but if you listen underneath all of that superficialness, at its core, it's like everyone's worth something, and I cannot take that away from that person.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, so talked a lot about last decade, last year. What is this year, what does this decade look like for Nelly's Echo?
Lots of happiness, God willing. So my band and I are going on tour to Cameroon for 21 days, and we're going to Malta for 8 or 9 days through the U.S. Embassy, or U.S. Cultural, I forget what it is, forgive me.
Wow.
But yeah, it's cool. I get to travel a lot just this spring. So that's, so Cameroon's in February, Malta is in April. I think I traveled to the Bahamas in May, along with all the other shows I do locally. And then this summertime, a lot of outdoor festival shows here. So my goal is to do more of that, but primarily just have my own podcast. So this is going to be a kick in the butt now. Put it out there, I got to start doing it. But to start my own podcast, but also in terms of music, I want to, moving forward, I want to start doing more theater-style shows where I play theaters all over the country, all over the world, and like 300, 500-seater theaters where I would come, no light, no bells and whistles, just having a conversation with an audience, take them on a journey. And that's my bread and butter. I love to just interact with people.
Yeah.
Right? It's for me, it's beautiful because it's like if I find 300 people in the room, it's like 300 ways to see God's worth and God's value and God's image, especially when you can control the narrative of the room and take them on that beautiful journey. So my goal moving forward from this summer moving forward is to have more theater style shows where there are no distractions. You can positively affect the mood of the room and take them on that journey.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's just about everything we've got to ask.
Okay.
Nelson, thank you so much for doing this. This has been fantastic. Hearing about your artistry, your music, and your podcast coming soon.
What do you think I should call it?
Something echo related,
echo
right? Ooh.
Is that
echo location? I don't know.
Cheesy though?
I think you need a little bit of cheesy though, right?
I agree. Yeah. I like cheesy. Okay, well, I'll contemplate that.
All right. Echolocation coming soon. For everyone listening, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you on the next one. Peace.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
This episode of Industry Herb was produced by Lainey Kitchmenda and edited by Ned Kitchmenda. Huge thank you to Nelson from Nelly's Echo for coming on. The song in the intro was If I Were the King by Nelly's Echo. You can find Nelly's Echo's music on Spotify or Apple Music by clicking the link in the description. Our outro music is by OK Thanks Baby and will also be linked in the description. Graphic design for this episode was done by Liam Fitzsimmons and logo design by Andre Fru. Check out our Instagram at IndustryHerbPod and feel free to reach out to us with any suggestions for future interviews and podcasts. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for more interviews coming on Season 2 of Industry Herb.